Folks, do you believe in our founders' vision for America? That our republic will only survive if we are an educated and informed people who know our rights and duties? Since 1844, Hillsdale College has sought to educate all who wish to learn about these timeless principles of self-government. For more than 50 years, the college has worked to spread that mission by sending Imprimis, their Digest of Liberty, to millions of Americans, including me. Imprimis features some of the best speeches given at Hillsdale events, and now an audio version of the popular speech digest is available in a new podcast of the same name. And like the printed publication, Imprimis the podcast is always free. You can hear the best arguments from speakers such as Christopher Rufo, Mark Stein, and Hillsdale College President Larry P. Arn, among many others, all read by Hillsdale students. Visit DanaForHillsdale.com to subscribe today and start listening to Imprimis today, all for free. To listen, visit DanaForHillsdale.com. That's DanaForHillsdale.com.
American speech is censored, parents are called terrorists, Catholics are called radicals, and I haven't even talked about the spying that took place of a presidential campaign or the raiding of a former president's home. But maybe what's more frightening is what happens if you come forward and tell Congress. If you're a whistleblower, come tell the legislature, come tell the Congress what's going on. Look out. You will be retaliated against. Ask Garrett O'Boyle, who told Congress about these issues. Took his clearance, they took his pay, they took his kids' clothes. Ask Gary Shapley, 14-year veteran at the IRS, handled some of the biggest international tax fraud cases at the agency. He comes forward and the Justice Department kicks him off the case. But here's what's truly unbelievable. Here's what's amazing. With all that history, with all that, the Justice Department, the FBI, want the taxpayers they censored, the parents they labeled, the pro-life Catholics they called radical. They want them to pay for a new FBI headquarters. And they want FISA reauthorization of the 702 program in its current form. It's in the director's opening statement. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. There are 204,000 reasons why Republicans will oppose FISA reauthorization in its current form. 204,000 times the FBI improperly searched the 702 database. And unlike the FBI censorship in the court's opinion that was focused on conservatives, the FBI's illegal scrutiny wasn't just limited to conservatives. BLM supporters were illegally scrutinized by the FBI as well.
They've even gone after Occupy people before. Yeah. They've done that before as well. Welcome to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen to the program. You can watch the simulcast. Just FYI, I'm having a serious systemic allergic reaction to something right now, so the cameras may go off after an hour. We're just going to let you know. Major issue, so it could spread everywhere. I'm not joking, before the end of the show. So just FYI, just letting you guys know there in case, you know, all of a sudden it just goes to audio and you don't have television anymore because my eyes may swell shut and I may not be able to see. So we'll just roll with it. But, you know, the show's got to go on. Congressman Jim Jordan. We talked to him yesterday, and they've been having this ongoing discussion, this testimony with Christopher Wray. That's what's been taking place all today. And I got to tell you, it really stuck out to me that whenever Republicans have time to ask questions, you know, they ask questions. They don't monologue. They don't sit here and go on and on about Joe Biden, et cetera, et cetera. They ask their questions and they, you know, seemingly want actual answers. There was one question that was asked where one of the lawmakers was saying that, you know, what can be done to protect some kind of framework for protecting Americans without sacrificing Americans' privacy or liberty. And then you get Hank Johnson, who I think is one of the stupidest people up there. And he was going on about, what is it, mega MAGA Republicans? Isn't that what he said?
Yep.
It was mega MAGA Republicans and all this other garbage. And oh my gosh, I'm like, what is the point of, and he didn't ask a question. He just monologued. He just monologued for his whole time. He didn't ask Ray a single question. He just went on and on and on and on. But, you know, other people were actually asking questions, these other lawmakers. And I thought, you know, that was, I mean, that was a question that I had kind of wanted to know as well, that one of these lawmakers had asked. You know, what are you going to do to protect Americans without sacrificing their security or liberty? And, you know, Ray really didn't have an answer to that. Jordan, I thought, asked a very good question as well, and you heard him talking about some of it. Because I think Chris Ray was trying to set himself up as, well, you know, I was appalled when I saw this or when I saw that. And then Jordan was asking him, well, what are these, what did he call them? What Catholics? Traditional, extreme traditionalist Catholics or something like that. Isn't that what he said?
I think I have some of this.
Yeah, listen to this. I was trying to remember the phrase that he said it, because Ray's answer, I thought Ray's, no, I don't know if people are going to pick up on Ray's first answer to this. Jordan went on, but Ray said, well, I'm not quite sure of all the, what did he say, all the different sects?
Yeah.
S-E-C-T-S? Yeah, listen to this.
Objection. Director, what's the difference between a traditional Catholic and a radical traditional Catholic?
I'm not an expert on the Catholic orders.
Well, your FBI wrote a memo talking about radical traditional Catholics. I'm just wondering if you can define it for us.
Well, what I can tell you is you're referring to the Richmond product, which was a single product by a single field office, which as soon as I found out about it, I was aghast and ordered it withdrawn and removed from FBI systems.
You were aghast? Then why won't you let us talk to the people who put it together?
We are working on finishing an internal review into what happened
there. We have to wait. We, the Congress, and the American people have to wait until you do an internal review. It's not a criminal investigation going on here. An internal review before we can talk to the people who wrote this?
When we finish our internal review, which will be very soon, we will come back before the committee.
Any idea how many Catholics in America?
And provide a briefing on what we found.
Well, we appreciate the briefing, but we want to talk to the people who wrote it. Any idea how many Catholics there are in America, Director?
No, sir.
There's a lot, over 60 million. What percentage of those are radical traditional Catholics, according to the Richmond Field Office of the FBI?
Again, that product is not something that I will defend or excuse.
Radical,
it's something that I thought was appalling and removed.
What does he mean when he goes, well, I'm not sure about the different sects? What does that mean?
Different orders.
Yeah, the different orders. What order does he think radical traditional Catholic is? I'm just really curious. What does he think that is? What is that? What order is that? That didn't make any sense to me when that happened. And that was just a little bit ago, and I was listening to it, and I thought, that seemed like a smart-ass answer, didn't it?
Yeah.
It seemed like a smart-aleck answer. Like, well, I'm not sure what... Well, you think that's an actual... That sounds like a classification that you made up, Ray. That was a smart-aleck answer. So Jordan had every right to be irate with him. Absolutely every right to be irate with him. And he also made a good point. Well, so why can't we talk to him? Well, we're doing an internal review. We're Congress. This isn't a criminal investigation. Why can't we talk to the people who made this? Oh, well, you know, we're doing the criminal review. He's sitting here telling Congress that Congress has no oversight when they do. That's appalling. So if you thought that Ray was presenting himself in any kind of good light, that exchange right there undercuts it totally. I thought that exchange was one of the most damning, because he gave a smart-aleck answer. But he was trying to couch it in a, he was trying to wrap it in a veil of sincerity, but it didn't work. If you could read between the lines, it didn't work. It didn't work at all. So this has been very, very insightful. And we're going to go, I mean, obviously I can't listen to it live now. That's just the stuff that I heard when I was listening to it live a little earlier. So, you know, I'm on air talking to you now, so I can't do the radio program and simultaneously listen to the hearing. So that's just what I got so far. Anything else, I'll have to be later. But, well, yeah, we're doing the show. We can't, it's just me and Steve and Kane that are monitoring this. So we don't have the manpower to do that live. But that's, you know, if anything pops up that someone flags, we'll bring it to you. And by the way, just so you know, if we do have to pull video for the radio show, cause I'm having a severe allergic reaction to medicine, like my eyes are swelling very slowly closed. We got to do the first hour though. We have to, but we'll let you know. We'll keep you updated. All right. So a couple of the other things to hit on, because I know you got the newsletter prep, and we mentioned this yesterday. Biden kind of shirked off the whole thing with the NATO dinner. It was a big NATO dinner last night. And Joe Biden didn't go to it because they said he's been, you know, very, very busy with all of his business. Four full days of business, I think, is what they said. Except Saturday, and Kane, I did run down when that image, the video was taken of him at the beach. That was on Saturday. So if he was there, so what's today? Wednesday.
So even today would barely be 4 hours or 4 days of work.
Why did they say that he had four full days of work with NATO? This doesn't make any sense. Saturday, because he had to fly from Delaware over there, and that's easy, what, 8 hours? So it's an 8 hour flight to what, London? From East Coast?
Right. It's also not an excuse if you just work four full days. Like, I think most of us work five full days a week.
Yeah.
He's our president, for crying out loud.
He's the president of the United States. Are you saying that he's too old and feeble to do this job? I am, but are they?
Yeah.
I mean, it's what it sounds like. It just sounded lame. It sounded lame, and apparently other people were talking about it. I don't know if you heard some of it, but yeah, they were all talking about it, and it doesn't look good because you want to project strength, and that's not projecting any kind of strength, not at all whatsoever. I mean, it's just if you saw in the thing yesterday I put in there, or the thing that came out this morning, the email prep list, that was the image that I used for the Wednesday prep. That was the of him laying on the beach. That was the image. He was on it Saturday. And then yesterday, which was Tuesday, the White House said he was too worn out from, quote, 4 days of business to attend last night's NATO dinner. That's exactly what was said. They came out and said that he wasn't attending the dinner with NATO leaders. And they said he had four full days of official business. He's preparing for a big speech in addition to another day at the summit. Four whole days, not four whole days. I mean, that's a lot of work to demand from the president of the United States. Four whole days. I mean, that sounds like he's not healthy. I mean, he was laying there on the beach literally like on Saturday. That's 4 days ago. He was on the beach. He had a beach vacation for 4 days. Working hard or hardly working? I think we know the answer to that. Meanwhile, Biden's White House has been, this is MSN, which isn't exactly... They republished this from Washington Examiner. I was actually shocked to see this because they're kind of a lefty entity, right? It's a lefty entity. They said that this White House is the most expensive White House ever, and that Biden's staff and Jill's staff are nearly twice. Jill's staff is twice the size of Melania Trump's. What in the hell does Jill Biden do that she needs a staff that's twice as large as Melania Trump's? What does she do? I mean... I'm just curious. What does she do? Why does she need that big of a staff? There's a joke in there somewhere. All right. Now, there is. You know what? I can say anything I want today because I'm having a serious allergic reaction to medication. So I can say whatever I want. Actually, the more I think about this, maybe we should keep the cameras running.
It does sound
because
like
I'll look pitiful as the more swollen shut my eyes get. Like, I've got a rash everywhere. I'm not, like, sitting here to tell you this. Does it feel sorry for me? I'm telling you guys this because I technically could turn into a major jackwagon later, and you can't say anything because I'm having an allergic reaction to medication. So maybe we will keep the cameras going.
It sounds like a valid medical excuse.
You know what I'm saying? Because I can't, you know, I mean, who's to say? I mean, I'm in lots of pain. I've got itching. I've got a rash all over my face. My eyes are swelling shut. Like, everything tingles. It's weird. And yeah, I've already talked to my doctor. I'm not going to die. Good heavens. Everybody calm down. But I'm just saying, you know, if I were to get squirrely and say whatever I wanted to say without threat of penalty, you know, I'm having an allergic reaction to medication. So I really could. This might actually work very well to our advantage. And I do have that get out of pass from the FCC chair. Oh my gosh, is he still the FCC chair? We got to just, is Mr. Carr still the, I'm sure he is, but I just want to make sure. Anyway, so I'm just saying. So we got a lot of stuff to discuss still. And then we're going to talk about Megan Rapinoe, who I legit thought was Jack White yesterday. I saw a photo over and I was like, is that Jack White? But it wasn't. It was Megan Rapinoe.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle ready-to-drink coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. As Biden continues to tout his Bidenomics plan, does any of it sound familiar? How about the Soviet-style five-year plan? State-run capitalism is not capitalism. Command and control economics fails every time it's tried. Bidenomics equals Chinanomics. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
What is going on with tap water? For real. So now, listen to this. This is enough to make you just want to drink beer forever. I don't know if there's anything wrong with that. Risk of cancer and pregnancy complications are up to 70% higher in neighborhoods where tap water is the most contaminated with PFAS, the forever chemicals, PFAS, with counties in North Carolina and Iowa amongst the... What are they doing in Iowa where they got this stuff? They said that the standard from the EPA is capped at a 4 whatever. I don't know what that means. It's basically you're going to have babies with like triple heads and I don't know. What does that even mean? What is it like forever chemical? Well, how is this getting in there? And see, I'm telling you, everybody's going to be drinking them life straws. You're going to be drinking with those life straws. I don't know. I would beat someone to death. United flight to Amsterdam was diverted because a brat passenger didn't like his food. A United Airlines flight bound all the way for Amsterdam, all the way to Amsterdam. It had to be diverted to Chicago because a passenger was upset that he didn't get his first meal choice. Sounds like a first world problem. That means he's in first class, and it means he's too much of a moron to have ordered his meal early ahead of time. So either he just got his ticket like, you know, he was on standby or something, but it's not their fault. It took off from Houston. They had to stop in Chicago because he lost his mind over his meal. I legit would have also gone to jail because I would have beaten him to death in the aisle. Not even joking. Also, I had something else. Oh, brownout with UPS and the Teamsters is getting closer and closer. We're going to talk about that here coming up. Stick with us.
The KS7 from Kel-Tec might be short and slim on the outside, but it's long under the hood with its 18.5-inch barrel packed into its bullpup design. It's ready for home defense, backcountry hiking, or anywhere you need a compact 12-gauge shotgun. The KS7 is lightweight with a magazine capacity of 6+1 or 7+1, depending on shell size, easy to handle with rear loading and downward ejection, and standard carry handle that doubles as a sighting solution. Every KS7 produced at Kel-Tec is made in the USA by a team who takes pride in their work and believes in respect, family, and the right to bear arms. Every KS7 comes with a lifetime warranty with proof of purchase as original owner. Defend what matters most to you with the KS7 shotgun available through Kel-Tec. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. That's KelTecWeapons.com. And sign up for the Kel-Tec Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories. Secure your world with Kel-Tec. KelTecWeapons.com.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Chairman Jordan has claimed that Mr. Duantuono said he had, quote, no idea, unquote, why the Mar-a-Lago investigation was run out of the FBI's Washington field office instead of the Miami field office. What the chairman hides is that just seconds later, Mr. D'Antuono explained that, quote, the venue was here, meaning Washington, D.C.
Just for the record, the pronunciation of the former assistant director in charge of the Washington field office is D'Antuono, something that ranking member might have known if he'd actually shown up at the deposition like I did.
Oh, slap. I heard that. Holy cow. That was a slap heard across the front yard. Welcome back to the program, Dana Lashier with you. Bottom of this first hour. That is the ongoing hearing. Christopher Wray is testifying. And we're going to be bringing you some of the highlights to that. And don't forget, you can listen across the country. You can stream the show. You can also watch the simulcast. But I will warn you, just because if I look a little odd, I'm having a severe allergic reaction to medication. So it's like My whole face is broken out into a weird rash. My eyes are swelling shut. So who knows? I'm slowly morphing into Sloth from the Goonies right before your eyes. So, you know, just have fun with that. Like, it's a treat for everybody. And it's also, I'm pretty much going to just say whatever I want. And then I'll just blame it on that so I can't get in trouble. See? Ha ha ha. Works in my favor. All right. So this, that was such a great point. I love how he just slapped down Nader there, Ralph Nadler, because I was listening to him pronounce his name and I thought that doesn't sound right because I'm pretty sure I've heard that said differently. But this has been really good so far. And I think that it's been shown that there's absolutely a double standard, politically speaking, a double standard that is clearly ongoing here. Because you had, like, for instance, and we played this, I'm not going to play it again, but I thought it was one of the more damning moments. And it was, Ray is trying so hard to look like he's above this fray. But when he was asked about traditional radical Catholics, because remember, that's what the FBI and the DOJ were looking for, you crazy Catholics out there. I don't know. I mean, how dare you worship? But there was a one point when Jordan was asking him about that. This was after Ray had given an answer as to they don't employ, you know, they're not politicizing anything. He's like, well, tell me about the traditional radical Catholics. You know, you were, that's a pretty significant portion of the United States population. What's so traditional radical about them? And Ray's answer was, well, I really don't know the difference between the orders. Like, he was trying to act like that was a legitimate thing. It was a smart aleck answer that Jordan, I thought that he responded in kind and pushed back harder, which was completely appropriate. Completely appropriate. All right, so a couple of things here. I wanted to get into some of the culture stuff, and I wanted to talk about some of the Bud Light things, too. I'm also going to just say this. I don't know why. I understand that sensationalism stuff can be good for news or good for views, especially in this online, you know, world in which we live. And everybody's got to get crazier and crazier for clicks. And then people's shorter attention spans. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, a lot of laziness and consumption also can contribute to this. This is where you get the same old platitudes over and over again to where everything sounds the same. But I get that. I don't think that men are so desperate. I get that men have been unjustly dinged by second and third wave feminism, but I don't think that men are so desperate that they need the savior service of any kind of douchebag cringe lord who brags about being a male slut and pretends that navel-gazing vanity is a substitute for masculinity. And I'm talking about this interview with Andrew Tate. I listened to some of it, but then I had to check out when he started crediting Putin for solving COVID and he started dogging Christianity. That's a problem for me. And when he was saying that, well, I was put into jail because I'm so brave, like I'm so totes brave, and I was speaking like the truth, I'm so totes brave. No, it's because, you know, you were accused of, and by the way, this stuff is public. I mean, when you live your life so publicly online and then you get in trouble for some of the stuff that you're doing because you're stupid enough to be so public about it, don't be shocked and then turn around and act like, it's because I was brave with my truth. That's not what happened here. I mean, when you're grooming girls, and that's what he's accused of, and creating porn and selling it, that's what he's accused of, that's a problem. I don't know how that's a... I mean, aren't we right now just celebrating a film about human trafficking? Yeah. Aren't we? Yeah.
Sound of Freedom.
Yeah, The Sound of Freedom. I find this incredibly ironic. And I'm not going to sit here and listen to a single childless dude weigh in on the culture of family and impacting culture beyond greasing oneself up for the camera. I just don't care, right? I'm just not, you know, it was this, and Tucker's a friend of mine. And, you know, Tucker will sit down and talk to anyone, but I also don't think that there's anything, I don't think it's worth pretending that this Tate dude is somebody that he's not. You know what he said, where it concerns Christianity? There's a very interesting quote, actually there's several quotes. He said first, quote, Islam is the natural end state for anybody who truly believes in God. How can you believe in a God who is mocked? Christianity, LOL. God should be feared. You're either an atheist or a Muslim. One group is degenerate. One group lives true. Make your choice. End quote. So his reasoning is your religion, if it can be mocked, isn't true. Boy, he sounds like a savior for men, doesn't it? Nobody said that. Literally nobody. I also think if you have to constantly tell people that you're a hard ass, that you're not. That's kind of a general rule. If you have to tell people over and over again that you're tough, you're not tough. The quotes and the mocking and the bashing of Christianity notwithstanding, I mean, if you believe that Jesus died on the cross for the sins of humanity, I guess that means you're a degenerate, because that's what he just said. That's what that quote means. Is that what people believe? If they, you know, think that he's, you know, I'm just curious about this. I think that this guy, and especially because this, and he's converted to Islam. He converted to Islam. And I think that his views, particularly about relationships within the faith, it makes sense because he has said, quote, he said this before, quote, I think you need a wife and you need hoes. He says you need multiple women so they can blank off and do women blank. He says women are the true currency of ballers, end quote. Do you want to know why you ended up with second and third wave feminist witches? Because of weak beta males like this. This is beta behavior. This is not alpha behavior. It's straight up beta behavior. So, I mean, that's just quote. I mean, I'm just like quoting him verbatim here. I think this is kind of a joke. I don't understand why, you know, we're talking about celebrating masculinity. I think that if you define this as masculinity, then you are probably part of the problem that doesn't know what masculinity is. And you've been led into believing that the male version of second and third wave feminism, because let's be honest, that's what this is. It's not masculinity and it's not chivalry. It is the beta male response to second and third wave feminism. But it's just reversed from a dude angle. That's all this is. This isn't masculinity. It's not strength. It's not alphaism. It's none of these things. That's just the honest truth of it. So I could sit here and regale you with more quotes, but you're gonna lose your appetite for lunch. Just saying. So, I mean, I don't mind do interviews, do whatever, but don't sit here and act like some dude's like this, you know, representation of masculinity or a representation of any kind of respectable anything. I think it's kind of a joke. I mean, it is, like I said, it's second and whatever beta male version you could manifest of second and third wave feminism. That's what this is. It is the version of that just inverted to dude form. That's it. That is not how you fight that stuff. You fight that stuff with actual masculinity. That's how you deal with it. So I'm just saying, like, you know, we got enough D-bag cringe lords in the societal mix. And men aren't so in such a bad spot that they need the services of anybody like that to elevate them. And I think that there are a lot more really good gents out there that are better examples, better representations, and actually tough and strong enough that, you know, they serve the point better than this. Now, that being said, getting into some of this cultural decline, Megan Rapinoe picked a fight with Dave Chappelle over trans rights. I saw this picture of her and I was like, is that Jack White? But it wasn't. She said, why is she still talking about this? Somebody made the point that she's trying to move into culture. And there's something to be said with, oh my gosh, Juan, if you're watching the simulcast, Juan just nailed it. Dude, it's Jack White. It's Jack White. That's who it is. She can't play soccer forever. So how does she remain relevant? She's got to move into the commentary cultural sphere. But she was saying, oh, Dave Chappelle making jokes about trans people directly leads to violence. Shut up. No, it doesn't. It does not. You know what leads to violence? Like trans people taking guns up and shooting up Christian schools. That leads to violence. You know, if you want to talk about violence, let's talk about that. Or what was the other person that just armed themselves and tried shooting somebody up? And they were trying to say, well, he wasn't trans, he was a cross-dresser. I was reliably informed by the same people that was the same. So, you know, just saying. So she's trying to say that if you make jokes about it, it leads to violence. She's one of those people who think that words are violence. Words are not violence. Violence is violence. Words are words. And she's also, I love, someone said she looks like a gayer version of David Spade. And I'm not going to be able to unsee that now. It's actually, so what, Dave Chappelle's responsible for all of it? According to her, he's responsible for everything. He's so powerful. So powerful. He can make a joke and it just incites a wave of violence across the world. Good heavens. It's hysterical. It is. It's hysterical. She also was saying that she's totally fine with trans players, like a dude taking a position on a woman's team. She might want to be careful about that. You know, she noticed that she was all fine defending and complaining about women in sports when she was making bank on it. But now apparently that, you know, the sun is setting on her professional career. Now she's going to switch it up. I mean, didn't you get beat by a bunch of high school boys? Maybe you shouldn't be saying stuff like that, because she would not have a career if it were not that. She's one of those people who I think she says stupid stuff like AOC and gets attention. It's or like other people. In some ways, she reminds me of like the female version of Tate, for real. So this, pull this up. YMCA accused a teen girl of hate speech because she didn't want a dude in the girls' locker room. A teenage girl, a minor, a 16-year-old teenage girl. She's a member of the YMCA Spy Swim Team. She entered the girls' locker room to change out of her swimsuit, and she noticed some dudes in the locker room. Oh, the transgender individuals. She informed the head swim coach, and he said, "There's nothing I can do about it." They held their monthly parent meeting where the issue of the girls' locker room being used by dudes was brought up. And the chief executive officer of the YMCA attended. They told parents, "Oh, there's nothing that can be done." So the parents asked that the YMCA could ask the trans, you know, the dudes to maybe use at least the family changing area. You know, but the dudes got to throw their thing around in the women's locker room, apparently. The YMCA staff said that they could not do that because it's discrimination. It's discrimination against the dudes, but apparently not discrimination against the girls, particularly the minor girls. Parents then asked the YMCA they could send out a notification that dudes were using the girls' locker room. The YMCA staff said they couldn't do that because it's discrimination. I was like, that's a law. So the daughter was like, I don't understand how this is happening. And when the coach was asked about it, he apparently left and said, transgender people have been around for a long time. The daughter said, that's not the question I asked. So long story short, she ended up getting bounced. She was told that her disagreement was hate speech. She didn't say anything hateful. And that she was asked to leave the pool area. So you have the coach, Alex Tatura, and YMCA. They were colluding to expose minor girls to naked adult men. That sounds like predator behavior. So the YMCA and swim coach Alex Tatura, T-O-T-U-R-A, were colluding, conspiring, one would say, to protect adult men and their actions of getting naked in front of minor girls in this YMCA locker room. That sounds like pedophilia. It sounds like predator behavior. I mean, that's just my First Amendment free speech right of observation. If you disagree with me, being that I'm a woman, that's discrimination and it's a violation of the law.
When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Patriot.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
And I again want to thank the Secretary for your work. This issue of transportation is fundamentally about just making sure that people have the ability to get where they need to go. It's that basic.
It's basically basic. What? The Department of Transportation is about making sure people need to get where they can go. Wow. Well, if that's all it is, then why do we have it? Get rid of it. We don't need it. We don't need that. Gosh, that's so dumb. Is there a day that goes by where she says something where anyone goes, you know what? Okay, I'll give her that.
So far, no.
I mean, how do you have so many misses? I mean, unless you're Andrew Tate, how do you have so many misses? Well, you know, the whole purpose of being a man is pain and struggling. I'm trying to do my best Ben Shapiro imitation, said Andrew Tate. It's because I'm having an allergic reaction today. It's one of the other side effects. It's extreme hostility. I don't know if you knew that or not, but it is.
I like it.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to be, I know, we're going to stretch out this, I think I'm going to keep taking the medicine because then you're going to feel sorry for me as I slowly morph into Sloth from the Goonies. I'm having a serious allergic reaction to medication. I had not conjunctivitis, but I had an eye infection. So I had to take medication for it. I got like something in my eye. And apparently now it's horrible. It's like even 50 times worse. But I think I'm going to keep doing it because then I'm just going to be a horrible, mean person. And I'm just going to say what everyone wants to say in a meaner way just to get it over with. We're just going to take it all off your shoulders. See, that I just feel like there's an upside to it, right? I mean, yeah, I'll, you know, Sloth love chunk, but I'm just, you know. All right, so coming up in our next hour, as long as I can see out of my eyes so far, then we'll be okay. But coming up next hour, we got a whole bunch of stuff. We still have cultural decline. Illinois is forcing landlords to rent to people who enter the country illegally. The UPS strike? Yeah, that's going to come. Well, you need to know some things about that. We got a lot on the way. Stick with us.
Did the FBI ask financial institutions to turn over their customers' debit and credit card purchase history in the Washington, D.C. area for January 5th and 6th, 2021?
I don't know the answer to that as I sit here right now.
Well, we do, because Bank of America gave it this email from the FBI to Bank of America.
Well, I am aware that Bank of America provided information to the FBI, but what communications occurred between the FBI and Bank of America about it?
Let's read it. To recap our morning call, we are prepared to action the following threshold. Customers transacting debit card, credit card, Washington, D.C. purchases between 1-5-21, 1-6-21. That's scary enough. But then the next bullet point's even more scary. Any historical, capital letters, all capitals, any historical purchase of a firearm. You guys asked financial institutions, at least Bank of America, we think more. Did you guys ask him?
Again, I don't have the full sequence of the back and forth. Looks like you've got one email that I haven't seen before here. So I don't know that I have the full exchange that this.
Well, does this email trouble you as much as it does members of the Judiciary Committee that the FBI is asking for every single? I mean, we had members of Congress here that week. First time they're getting sworn in as a new member of Congress, their family in town, and you're sweeping, and they may happen to be a customer of Bank of America, and you're sweeping up every debit and credit card purchase of their family who were in town that week because their husband or their dad or their mom is getting sworn in as a new member of Congress. And then you're also saying, overlaying that information with, did this person buy a firearm?
And the question is?
I'm just nervous about that. Are you nervous about that?
As I think I've testified before, my understanding is that our engagement with Bank of America was fully lawful, but that we recalled the leads that were cut to field
offices. Well, if it's lawful, that was my next point. If it's lawful, why did you say we're not going to use these leads? That's what Mr. Jensen testified to when we deposed him, the director of the terrorism unit at the FBI. That's what he testified to. Why did you not use the leads if it was lawful to get the information?
Well, there are
Chairman, it's 1 minute and 18 seconds over time.
There are plenty of times where there are things that we lawfully can do, but that we decide is better that we not do. And yeah, I think that's what happened.
The idea that Mr. Massey said earlier, that this is lawful, that you can ask this is scary. This is something else we're going to have to change.
Wow. I mean, if you thought that, you know, he's really trying to, Ray is really trying to make it like, oh, no, I'm just this moderate I'm just appalled by, you know, some of the stuff, but he participated in it. Every single time Jordan asks him a question, him or Massey, I'm all ears. Welcome back to the program, top of this second hour of the radio show. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream it. You can watch our simulcast, which we're keeping going. If I look weird, it's because I know I've said it before, but for those just joining, bear with me. If you're joining, I'm having like a severe allergic reaction to medication. So I've got like a rash going, eye swelling all happening. So I'm turning into Sloth from the Goonies before your eyes. So just, you know, take it. I'm going to take it and use it as an excuse to say whatever I want to say. And then you can't get mad at me because, oh, she's having a reaction to Madison. We've already been pushing that envelope. So this ongoing, this here, I mean, he's the director of the FBI, but he's like, oh, no, the rules say you literally run the department. The rules are what you want them to be. And his testimony, particularly when he was asked about the FBI Washington field office, the raid. I'm pulling this up from Mar-a-Lago. It seems to conflict with the former assistant director in charge. I mean, he was asked about, he was also asked about from Chip Roy regarding Brian Auten, who was a figure in Russiagate. And then he was investigated for misconduct. He was also one of the people who allegedly buried the Hunter Biden laptop because they were trying to say that, oh, no, it's misinformation, except it wasn't. The question, he's just not given good answers. And you can't say that, well, I can't do this because of the rules of the law. These are the rules. You're the boss, though. You run the FBI. Like when he was asked by Jim Jordan, well, you know, these individuals who made up this whole radical traditional Catholic thing. And then he was also saying this about the investigation into the Bank of America and giving up firearm records, etc. He's like, you know, why can't, you know, we need to be able to talk to them. Why haven't we been able to talk to them? And Ray's like, well, you know, we're doing an internal investigation. And Jordan and others, because it was pretty much the same exchange on a different aspect of impropriety. Ray says, well, you know, we can't, that's not how it goes. You know, these are the rules. The rules are, you know, we got to do this internal investigation. Jordan's like, this is not a criminal investigation. We just want to talk to them. It's like, oh, no, this is the rule. You're the director of the FBI. You get to determine what the rules are and what they aren't. You can't hide behind that. You can't skirt the rules and then simultaneously hide behind the rules. It's not how it goes. Well, it's a good thing that, you know, the president and vice president are focusing on what matters right now. And as you know, some of the things, I actually put this at 12:30 and I mean to have it now. The vice president of the United States, she's upset about the bathrooms on domestic flights, ladies and gentlemen. It's her actual account. It's not a parody, I checked. She tweeted last night at 5:30 p.m., quote, the majority of domestic flights do not have accessible restrooms. This is absolutely unacceptable. Our administration will soon announce a solution to help end this inequity. Oh my gosh, inequity. You cannot use the word inequity for everything. Right? You cannot use the word inequity for everything. I mean, I could sit here and say, you know what? I wanted this special lemonade swirl lip gloss that they don't have anymore. It's inequity that I don't have it. Right? Kane could want something and it's inequity that he doesn't have it. You can't sit here and use inequity for everything. That's not how vocabulary works. But aside from that, what problem does she have with bathrooms on domestic flights?
When's the last time she's been on one?
Yeah, when has she ever been on commercial airlines? I mean, what problem does she have? You know, the problem that I have is people who pee on the floor. What is up with that? You want to hear a funny story? So one time I was on my way to New York. I was in business class. I can't remember what I was going up there for. I think it was like a primary caucus thing. I don't remember. I had TV to do. I was on my way up there and, you know, I was with it was a smaller plane and I was with basically one of the few women. All the dudes were in suits. It was like clearly a business flight. And I thought, oh, they're all in suits. Bathrooms should be relatively clean. Because you guys, if you have ever listened to the show for longer than a year, I have a thing. Public restrooms are disgusting. Plain restrooms even more so. But I'm like, everybody's in suits. I mean, they seem professional. Should be all right. You know, I'm not saying that people who aren't in suits are professional, but my thought was they're in a suit. They probably don't want to get dirty. You know what I mean? Right. Nope, nope, nope. Walk into the restroom. And it was as though the parting of the seas had just occurred and everything was now coming back into its natural form. There was such a spray all over the entire restroom. It's like someone went in there and lost total control of their willy. I have no idea what was going on in there. And it was to the point where the floor is not supposed to be slippery. I mean, in fact, it's designed to offset against something like that. But such was the mess that it was. And I slipped at one point, literally as I walked in there, and I hit the door really hard to catch myself. But I didn't want to alarm anyone. So I did, you know, very courteously, I yelled out, oh, no, I just slipped on some urine. I'm okay. I just yelled it. And then I realized, wait, that's not enough information because I don't want people to think that it's my urine that I slipped on. So I added the caveat, it's not my urine that I slipped on. It's someone else's urine. I yelled it out because I didn't want there to be any confusion, you know. Anyway, that's the only problem that I have with restrooms on planes. So she says, this is the vice president burdened by what has been. The majority of domestic flights, what does she mean accessible restrooms? Does she mean like handicap accessible?
Maybe.
Does she think you should be able to take your wheelchair like all the way through the aisles and then right up into the plane bathroom?
Right.
Because that's not how that works. I mean, you don't even, your wheelchair goes below. It goes into baggage. Has she literally ever, I mean, if you want to talk about accessibility, I got a point to raise. Can most people actually afford plane tickets anymore because they're so broke because of her administration? If you want to talk about accessibility, it seems like it. Why is she talking about transportation stuff? Isn't that convenient and weird? Are they trying to help Pete? Is this something to help Poot Booty Juice out? Genuine question. I mean, no plane bathroom can accommodate a wheelchair. They don't have those. I think the real problem actually are people who blink vertically, like that dude that was on that flight that one chick was said, he is not real. That seems like that's the bigger problem here. You know, I'm just wondering. All right, so this whole thing, because I have a lot more of the culture stuff. I wanted to touch on this thing with Bud Light. They've plummeted, to 14th place among beers. Now, the CEO of Anheuser-Busch is begging all of everybody to think of the employees that you've impacted. I'm sorry, that who's impacted? Brendan Whitworth. So he's saying, he actually says this, it's the impact, honestly, on the employees that weighs the most on me. Well, who's the CEO here, Slick? It ain't me. Are you the CEO of Anheuser-Busch, Kane?
Last time I checked, I am not.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not. I mean, if I'm going to get blamed for the decisions that a CEO makes, I got to have that CEO paycheck. If I'm going to get blamed for the decisions of the CEO, I didn't get no CEO paycheck. Did you get a CEO paycheck, Kane?
Nope.
I didn't get one. I'm, you know, telling you what. So they're saying, oh my gosh, you've got to think of the employees. That's not my problem, champ. They're begging people to come back. They're talking about their distributors and all this other stuff, all these people that are impacted. They're impacted because you're morons. There are repercussions for being a moron and making dumb decisions. Dumb decisions that affect people way beyond you, that affect people, you know, beyond, you know, the people in the fancy offices up there at AB. That's the thing that gets me. It's like, this is not anybody else's issue but yours. These people, their economic well-being is based on the decisions you make, and you chose wrong. Good heavens. Not anybody else's fault. They still don't get it. They keep demonstrating that they just don't get it at all.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so we have like three China headlines in a row, CCP headlines. China-based hackers breached U.S. government and email accounts, according to Microsoft and the White House. They breached it at two dozen organizations, including a number of United States government agencies in an apparent spying campaign aimed at acquiring sensitive information, according to statements from the aforementioned Microsoft and White House late yesterday. The full scope is being investigated, but officials in Microsoft have been quietly scrambling to assess the impact and contain the fallout. They said it was first detected, in the State Department. They said they reported this suspicious activity to Microsoft. And apparently hackers were also detected targeting a small number of federal agencies and a handful of official email accounts at each agency in a hack that was aimed at specific officials. Multiple sources familiar with the investigation said they successfully breached two executive branch agencies, including the State Department. And they also targeted an agency on Capitol Hill, but they don't know if they were successful with that. That's kind of frightening, right? So the luxury chain Bulgari has apologized to China for listing Taiwan as a country after backlash. Bulgari looks like it's spelled with a BV instead of a BU. But Bulgari has become the latest international brand to apologize. China claims self-ruled Taiwan is its territory, even though Taiwan is its own country. Bulgari posted an apology on Weibo, China's version of Twitter, saying that it steadfastly and always respected China's sovereignty and territorial integrity. So the Italian luxury brand turned into a giant female copulatory organ when China decided to pound their tiny little fists on the table, right? Know what it is? So Bulgari, I've never shopped there. Not like I'm going to. Definitely not like I'm going to now. But stop being cowards, you people. Van lords. This is a real thing. It's a new form of urban encampment. So accessory dwelling units. This is a new way to force people into perpetual renting. They're even advertising this. So apparently there's, you know, like particularly in LA and Santa Barbara, there's tons of rental RVs that have appeared. Government found a way to house people who come in illegally. And then you have other people who get RVs at an auction and then they tow them to somewhere and they're not totally legal and they rent them out in like perpetuity. That's weird. We got a lot more on the way. Stick with us. Don't go anywhere.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
When we caught up with him late in the day, Tuberville clarified his comments.
What is a white nationalist?
White nationalist is somebody that thinks that they should be the only ones in this country, okay?
Racist all the time.
Right, racist. That's what I'm saying.
Man. So, I'm actually shocked. I thought his name was Tuberville. It's Tuberville?
No, I always thought Tuberville.
Really? Tuberville. I think I would mispronounce my name and be Tuberville. Because they'd call you Tubbers or something.
Right.
You know? I don't know. I'm just saying. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. So, that's Senator Tuberville. Sorry. Tommy Tuberville. And remember, he used to have me blocked, and then he unblocked me. I don't know why. We never figured that out.
Nope.
I don't know what it was. Who knows? Maybe it's, you know, I go back and forth, being shadow banned, not, I don't know, who knows. Anyway, so I'm trying to understand this stupid story. So what I told you yesterday, I was explaining to you yesterday the whole situation with the National Defense Authorization Act, right? National Defense Authorization Act, that's always has been, I was going to say bipartisan. It's not bipartisan now. It always has been a very innocuously bipartisan thing that everybody could come together and support. But unfortunately, Democrats have decided that they wanted to add, what is it? Everything from surgery, gender reassignment surgery for troops. I know. Taxpayer funded abortions. They had a DEI chief that I think the current language of the NDAA has struck, But apparently there's still a bunch of CRT and all of that in there, programs and things like that, that are taxpayer funded in there. And that's where you have a lot of people who are like, this is a no-go, which I agree with, because there's no reason why you need to have all of this stuff in here in the first place. Taxpayers should not be funding this, and the military should not be a social experiment. And so there are a lot of people in the Senate that are really sticking it out. And apparently, I'm going to have to say his name slowly because I want to say Tuberville. Tommy Tuberville is one of them. So I was trying to figure out how this actually started. Did it start with an interview that was on CNN when he was asked about this?
Yeah, I think so.
Because and I don't know why in the world he was asked specifically about white nationalists. So there was a couple of different pieces that I was looking at because Mitch McConnell weighed in on it yesterday. He was asked by CNN, one of their congressional correspondents. Now, the congressional correspondent had asked Mitch McConnell, well, Senator Tuberville seems to have a hard time denouncing white nationalism, especially as it pertains to white nationalism in the military. I don't even know how this became. This is what the media always does. Let's talk about white nationalism. Let's talk about the activist arm of the Democrat Party. Let's go ahead and have that conversation. And they said that Tuberville had danced around the issue. So he talked with Caitlin Collins over at CNN, who's apparently getting absolutely beaten into a hole in the ground in the ratings. She's a decent interviewer, but she's got to crank up the personality to host. She asked him to clarify previous comments that he made about white nationalism in the military. And that question had to do with, he said, quote, if you're going to do away with most white people in this country out of the military, we have huge problems. And she asked him, it's not people who are white, it's white nationalists. Do you see the distinction? And he said, he was continuing, I guess he was still talking, that have different beliefs. He goes, now, if racism is one of those beliefs, I'm totally against it. I'm totally against racism. And she says, but that is a white nationalist. A white nationalist is a racist senator. And he says, well, that's your opinion. She says, it's not an opinion. And he adds, if it's racism, I'm totally against it. I'm totally against any type of racism. I don't care what it's in. So he says he's against racism. So that means he's a racist? I'm just trying to figure out why they're characterizing him like that. Because I was running down because CNN has done one interview after the other, and they've done one story after the other, and it's like it was almost impossible to run down how this even came about. And so then he was asked about that, and then I guess he was asked about this with the other congressional correspondent there. This is just so wild. And they said, he had said, I'm totally against it. If the Democrats want to say that white nationalists are racist, he said, I'm against that too. I don't even know what he's talking about. So are they mad because he says that he's against racism, or that do they think that he is not defining white nationalism appropriately? I'm trying to figure that out. Which is it? He's not, I will say this, he's not helping himself, but I also don't think that the media, they are always completely blowing every single thing out of proportion. I don't think he's helping himself, but I also kind of wonder, does he understand what he's being asked to define? What his answer should have been is that he opposes any kind of progressive identity politic because it is anti-biblical. That's what he should say. That should be his answer. All of it. Any identity politics. All identity politics are anti-biblical because you're disrupting the divine order of the godly kingdom. And it's completely anti-biblical and it's anti-Christian. That should be his answer. That shuts them all up. That's why you got to answer this stuff, because they're devolving down to, well, let's talk about the racisms. That's immediately what they're doing. But he's not helping himself, and I don't know if he understood what he was being asked. Like, does he know what he's being asked? But ultimately, why they did this and why they started, because you might be wondering, why in the world are they talking about white nationalism in the context of NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, because he's holding out, and the all of the woke stuff that they're trying to attach to this that we went over yesterday, he's holding that up. So they got to character assassinate him somehow. I mean, when I first saw these headlines, I was like, oh my gosh, what did he say? What did he say? How bad is it? And I went to read it. I'm like, wait, because they acted like he basically put on a hood like Joe Biden's friend that he eulogized and, you know, then started doing interviews. And I just didn't think it seemed like they were a little bit, there's some hyperbole there. I'm not the only person who thought that over at Red State. Brandon Morris is writing the same. He's like, it seems like they were, I was breathlessly oversold this stuff. So this is all about NDAA. But that should be the answer to anybody who's ever asked about this stuff. I just can't, it's just wild that this is, I'm always skeptical when I see this stuff. When I see these types of headlines, I'm always like, wait a minute, are they, because they acted like it, I mean, to me, he sounded confused. And then he's also like, I'm against all racism. He should say that, and he's against any type of progressive identity politics. Because it is progressive. All of it is progressive. Anything where you are highlighting or promoting over basic humanity identity politics for which you are not responsible, that is absolutely a progressive trait. And it's prevalent on the left. I mean, where do you think the Klan, that was the activist arm of the Democrat Party? Absolutely the enforcement arm of the Democrat Party. I just think it's lame that CNN has to devolve to that level. Like, instead of talking about, you know, why people are opposing NDAA because of these things, these amendments that are being pushed into it, we should discuss, you know, we should discuss why people are opposing them instead of engaging in this kind of, it's just smut. I don't know how else to describe it. It's ridiculous. Meanwhile, Americans are cutting back on things like toothpaste and other essentials. Yeah. This MSN says that they're cutting back on personal hygiene products. It's a troubling sign for the U.S. economy and consumer-focused companies. Despite surging inflation, shoppers kept spending because of income gains and government stimulus. But now all of that's waning. And so people are skimping on everyday items like toilet paper and toothpaste even. And it's this, and also inflation. Let's think about how much more expensive inflation has made these things. How much of your dollar stretch has been cut because of inflation? That's one thing that they're all very, very careful to not note. Meanwhile, U.S. homeowners lost $108.4 billion. You want to talk about equity? That's the equity that matters. They lost $108.4 billion in equity this year, leaving more than 200,000 at risk of going underwater if property prices fall by another 5%. And you have corporate bankruptcies hitting the highest level since 2010, all because of Bidenomics. That's the real stuff that people are dealing with. You have the vice president talking about the equity, the inequity of bathrooms on domestic flights. This is what people are dealing with. And then you have this UPS strike. You got Kamala Harris out there. Kamala Harris talking about transportation is about where people are getting where they need to go. Now you have the United Parcel Service and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, all of those discussions fell apart last week. So now there's an even greater possibility that there could be a massive walkout. The contract's expected to expire at the end of the month. 340,000 people represented there. And they voted to authorize a strike if they don't reach this deal before the 31st of the month. It would be one of the largest in U.S. history. And it would affect absolutely everything. Now, the shipping company says that it transports about 6% of the gross domestic product for the United States alone. They have contingency plans in place, they said, for the products they're shipping and the members who strike. That's what UPS told The Hill last week. They said that a strike would immediately kick off a supply chain disruption. I mean, similar to what we saw with the pandemic. But they said that there are some shippers who are now considering shifting volume to FedEx. I got to tell you, FedEx sucks. I mean, if you work for them, I'm sure you're lovely. But I got to tell you, some of the stuff that we've seen, I've got, like, I don't really complain about a lot. But I got to tell you, when you see people on video throwing stuff over your fence and things like that and leaving stuff out in the road to get run over by cars, I'm like, what is the matter with you? Like, why can't you just, like, put it on the porch? Come on. I've had so many problems with them. It's been crazy. They said that shippers, though, are considering shifting volume to FedEx, and they should start working with a company now. They said if you're shifting how you're shipping things out, you need to start doing that now to prepare for any kind of industry disruption. And the UPS said that they have a new coast-to-coast 2 to 5 day shipping offering. So it's going to be bad if it goes to that point. UPS drivers make over $18 an hour in Arkansas, over $17 in Oklahoma. They make $21 in Connecticut, $21 an hour. And they had $11.5 billion in net income last year. And their profits have been doing really well. So they said that if they don't have a deal the 31st, they're going to strike. That's it. They said they're going to walk away from the post the moment the contract ends. That's going to be something. So we'll see. Where's the administration on all that? By the way, just curious, asking for some friends. We have a lot more on the way. We got more culture for you. We've got 2024. We got to talk about Iowa because we got some problems brewing. We're going to discuss Iowa. We're also going to discuss some tech and how 40% of Brown University students say they're not straight. There's a social contagion underway.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right, so I got a couple here. Florida sinkhole. It's a Florida sinkhole. It swallowed one man, and it decided it wanted to come back for more. This is weird. So this was in March 2013. Sad story. A man was swallowed when a sinkhole literally opened beneath his bed in Sefner, Florida. Like, literally right under his bed. Ate him. And so now, Hillsborough County Fire Rescue, the sinkhole has reopened for the third time in 10 years. Now, they told people it's safe to remain in your houses, but stay away from the site until the hole is repaired. Can you repair a sinkhole, though? They just put a giant fence around it. I mean, can you repair it? This guy literally was asleep in his bedroom, and the hole opened up and swallowed his bed with him in it. And his brother tried to save him, but couldn't. They never recovered the body. What? Yeah. They literally never recovered the body. That's according to WFTS, the local network there. So they declared the ground around the property to be so unstable, they had to demolish that guy's house and two other neighboring houses. And they put a plaque there by where it happened, but they've never been able to recover his body. It's like that's just one of the weirdest things I've ever heard. So watch the flood. Now, see, I always thought when I was younger that I was going to have to worry about how to get out of quicksand, how to put out a fire on myself, you know, stop, drop, and roll, and quicksand. Like, those were the things that I always thought I needed to be concerned about. Now I'm like, what? We were never told about sinkholes, right? Didn't you think you were going to have a lot more problem with quicksand than you have?
Yeah, it's like that series Outer Range, if you remember that series on Amazon.
Yeah, what happened to that series?
I don't know. I don't think it went to a second season, but that giant
hole. Is that the one with the Brolin, Brolin in it?
Yeah. And this hole must go on forever as well if they've never recovered the body.
But have you seen, if you can see the photo in the simulcast that Juan is showing, what gets me is that it's like such a perfectly round hole. It looks like it was drilled out. It's really weird. I'm not saying it's aliens, but yeah. I got some more Florida Man. I'm going to do this one. A Florida man throws a barbecue grill at deputies and strikes cars with a tire iron in a road rage fit. If it's a road rage fit, where's your barbecue grill? So this Florida guy, he's behind bars. He had a tantrum on the road. He intentionally rammed into other cars. He struck them with a tire iron and then threw a barbecue at deputies, Brevard County. It was yesterday morning in Cocoa. And they said that Raymond Hoffman is in custody. He faces a number of charges. And he was very upset. He parked his Chevy Tahoe in the middle of the street, rammed into cars as they tried to go around him. And then he got out of his car and began hitting passing cars with a tire iron. He broke the driver's side window of a truck. The tire iron got stuck in the glass. Deputy shared a photo online. I mean, that's nuts. Other people were calling 911. He also had a nail gun, and he was threatening people at the scene. When they arrived, they found him armed with a crowbar. And they told him to drop it. Then he moved to deputies, said, "You're going to have to kill me." Then he, right as he said that, he threw the crowbar on the ground and tried to flee. Didn't happen. Then he threw a chair and a barbecue at the deputies. I got to tell you, I may have dropped him when he did that. Yeah. You know, I'm just saying. So he's in custody on all the charges, basically. Stay with us. We got a lot more on the way. 2024 in Iowa. Ooh, stick with us.
Can you define what disinformation is?
What I can tell you is that our focus is not on disinformation, broadly speaking.
Well, wait a minute. Yes, it is. Well, wait a minute.
Answer the question?
You can in a minute. Your star witness said in the litigation, Elvis Chan, who's in charge of this, said they do it on the basis of disinformation. We need a definition of what that is.
Our focus is on malign foreign disinformation, that is, foreign hostile actors who engage in covert efforts to
Mr.
abuse...
Ray.
Our social media platforms, which is something that is not seriously in dispute.
I have to stop you for time. That's not accurate. You need to read this court opinion because you're in charge of enforcing it.
Yeah. Golly. Oh, it's only for foreign, you know, whatever. That's not at all, in fact, what the truth of the matter is. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. Top of this third hour of the program. You can listen coast to coast. You can also check out the stream. You can watch the simulcast on YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV, dealing with a allergic reaction. So it's a little bit, look a little differently today. So if we're trying to carry the show all the way through, and then I promise I'm going to the doctor after. It's just a reaction to medication. So Chris Ray in this, because his hearing has been today, and we've played some very interesting cuts from Jim Jordan. There's some from Thomas Massie and others. Chip Roy's had a good Q&A, particularly when he was being asked about, you know, when what you just heard him say there, that this has to do with, you know, we're looking at foreign, you know, whatever. And he later explained that one of their task forces was actually created in response to domestic terror threats. And then that's when Democrats went down this rabbit hole of what they considered, you know, white supremacy terrorist attacks or whatever. Apparently, nobody thought to bring up, you know, the trans activist violence in Christian schools. But he also admitted that, you know, the Bank of America and other businesses are sharing people's records all the time with the FBI. And there was a very good, and I can't remember who it was. It was Rogers or somebody else that was having this discussion with them. But he was saying, look, what, you know, you can't be sharing these people's information like this. They're simply, you know, if they're going out and they're, you know, they're not doing anything wrong. They're not doing anything wrong at all. They're just simply going out purchasing a firearm, or they're going out and doing this. And, you know, you're giving records over without a warrant. You know, that's not how this works. And he was even asked at one point, you know, how do you preserve the ability to protect Americans from actual credible threats while not, you know, casting without this irresponsible system that we have now, where average everyday Americans now have to wonder if they're going to be baselessly considered a threat at any given time because of the politicization of these efforts. And I go back to the way that parents, when they spoke out at school boards, the way that they were being classified by the DOJ and the FBI. What was the, it was a terrorist tag. Do you remember what it was called?
No.
It was some kind of tag that they had used that was made possible by the Patriot Act. And that's how they classified these parents. And so Chris Ray was, you know, he was discussing, and this is, let's play this, because this was the Q&A with him and Massie. He was being asked about tracking and sharing customer data with the FBI, but without anybody's permission and really their knowledge. Listen to this, Audio Soundbite 24.
George Hill, former FBI supervisory intelligence analyst in the Boston field office, told us that the Bank of America, with no legal process, gave to the FBI gun purchase records with no geographical boundaries for anybody that was a Bank of America customer. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I do know is that a number of business community partners all the time, including financial institutions, share information with us about possible criminal activity. And my understanding is that that's fully lawful.
Did you ask for that information?
In the specific instance that you're asking about, my understanding is that that information was shared with field offices for information only, but then recalled to avoid even the appearance of any kind of overreach. But my understanding is that that's a fully lawful process.
Was there a warrant involved?
Again, my understanding is that the institution in question shared information with us, as happens all the time.
Did you request the information?
I can't speak to the specifics.
Okay, well, we've got an email where it says the FBI did give the search queries to Bank of America, and Bank of America responded to the FBI and gave over this information without a search warrant. Do you believe there's any limitation on your ability to obtain gun purchase data or purchase information for people that for people who aren't suspects from banks without a warrant?
Well, now you're asking a legal question, which I would prefer to defer to the lawyers, since I'm not practicing as one right now, including the department.
That's
what I will tell you is that my understanding is that the process by which we receive information from business community partners across a wide variety of industries, including financial institutions, sharing information with us about possible criminal activity,
that is such
something
a dodge.
That is fully lawful under current federal law.
Maybe so, lawful, but it's not constitutional. I yield back.
He and Massey actually makes a really good point right there. So, in what the point where he said yes, this was included, and then it was recalled. So they go ahead and they carry out the offense, and then they apologize afterwards. Oh yes, it was. You know, we went ahead and did it, and then it was recalled. For what purpose, though? I mean, if you're going to go after someone's private information like that, where is the warrant? Because it is a federal law that you cannot collect that type, specific type of information, collect and store, you know, for the purposes of a registry. And it just seems to me, I mean, the law is pretty clear cut. I mean, I'm amazed at, and then he tries to hide behind, well, you know, that's a question of the law, and I'm not, but you're the director. And I know he keeps trying to dodge and say, well, the rules say, or, well, that's, you know, a legal question, and I can't. You are the director of the FBI. You are being asked to state what you do, not explain the legal theory behind it, to simply state what it is that you do. So for him to say that, well, I can't answer that question, it's a legal question, that's not what's being asked. And he knows that. That's so ridiculous. I'm glad that Massey wasn't going to let him get away with that. For anyone who's arguing that Ray is some kind of a moderate, you have been snowed. There are actually, there's a couple of comments every now and then, whether it's in social media, like Facebook or Twitter, or sometimes it'll be, sometimes I'll even see it, like comments on YouTube, or I'll even see, you know, I'll get emails, and, you know, and sometimes I'm wondering, I'm like, are you Ray's family? Like, what is up with, we're not being caustic, and we're not being unnecessarily harsh in criticism. This is accurate. I mean, this guy has done some shady stuff, and he's being called to account for it. You cannot sit here and honestly tell me that this guy is a moderate, or that this guy isn't as bad as some others. He's the one who tries to give it this veil of harmlessness, because he tries to make it look like it was either a simple mistake, or this is just protocol, or it's none of these things. I mean, case in point, you know, he's admitting that they're sharing innocent people's records with the FBI all the time. And this, by the way, confirms a majority of people's suspicions. This comes from a study that was a few months ago that the FBI was being weaponized against the people it's sworn to protect. Now, I will say that, and again, I like to give props to the people within the Bureau that come out and blow the whistle on this stuff, because it kind of restores your faith in the fact that there are some good people that are working, you know, against this, work going against the grain in these departments. But the way that the departments are being operated, and the way that political tribalism has tainted everything, I mean, they are really fighting up, you know, upstream. Like George Hill was the former FBI supervisory intelligence analyst. He was in the Boston field office, and he apparently told he told Thomas Massey, he told members of the committee that Bank of America had no legal process, was just giving people's firearms purchase records with zero boundaries, no boundaries, for anybody that was a Bank of America customer. Now, that came from an intelligence analyst within the FBI. So the FBI is telling on itself. The people there that are seeing some bad stuff happen, they're like, whoa, 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 this is not what we signed up for. Thank heavens for those people, because that's how we know about all this stuff. And they gave it over. And he said, and Ray was like, well, you know, there's a number of business community partners. They share information all the time about possible, here's the phrase, possible criminal activity. Now, you know, it's lawful. Is it? He says it's lawful. And that's when Massey gets into what you heard. Is there a warrant involved? And then they go on and on about that. And he goes, it's not constitutional. And he's right. He's absolutely right. This is wild. The FBI at one point, I'm sure you saw this, they thought that they were censoring on behalf of Ukraine. Remember? And then, no. It was Washington Times says the FBI was enlisted by the Security Service of Ukraine soon after the Russian invasion to demand social media platforms take down posts and block accounts like those belonging to American journalists. That was from also from the House Judiciary Committee. But in fact, it was Russian spies in Ukraine. They duped the FBI to censor Americans. Is that not something? So they apparently vetted that as much as they vetted, as well as they vetted, what's his face, Chris Steele? Yeah. Russian spies in Ukraine suspected of duping FBI to censor Americans on social media from Washington Times. Carrie Pickett has the story. They were enlisted by the Security Service of Ukraine soon after the Russian invasion to demand that these platforms take posts down and block accounts like those belonging to journalists. They said it's now suspected that Russian agents had infiltrated the Ukraine intelligence agency, known by the acronym SBU, potentially manipulating the FBI's attempts to censor the journalists and at least one State Department official. They also, the FBI itself, vouched for removing these posts that were pro-Ukraine or critical of Putin. Is Andrew Tate running it? Given that SBU was comprised by a network of Russian collaborators and sympathizers and double agents at the time, the report from the panel's select subcommittee, the weaponization of federal government, they, I mean, they're like, the conclusion is that the FBI did not at all properly vet, if at all, SBU's requests. And they were apparently completely unaware of the domestic nature. They carried them out anyway. They violated the First Amendment rights of Americans and undermined our national security because they are so politically tribal that they couldn't bring themselves to vet whether or not the thing that they were doing was actually at the behest of Russian spies masquerading as Ukrainian ops. Unbelievable.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, this isn't good news coming out of Austin, Texas. So apparently they in Austin, they said that they've announced that they're suspending the law enforcement partnership with Texas DPS, Department of Public Safety. They said it was an innovative approach to address acute staffing shortages, but now they has to any approach has to be in sync with Austin values. What are Austin values? A friend of mine said someone's getting murdered. They were tired of the crime rate going down, so I guess that's not Austin values. That damn crime rate. You can't go down. Good heavens. This guy's like okay, I don't mean to make light of this, but whenever I see, I have a horrible, horrible habit of whenever I see, I'm a cynic, so this is weird. If I see something bad, I immediately try to find a silver lining in it, right? So please do not think I'm being disrespectful, but it literally was the first thing that popped into my head. A man was found dead in a Minnesota freezer. He was hiding from police, 34-year-old, out of Babbitt, Minnesota. It was a chest freezer, and I'm just like, that is the hide-and-seek champ. Yeah. Was my first thought. There was an active warrant out for him, and he hid from police, and apparently, I guess, it was an older model, so you couldn't open it from the inside. It wasn't running when he was found. It's horrible. It's so bad. I don't know why I did that. It's so bad. But good heavens. It is sad, but my first thought was, that's the hide and... Does that mean? I don't mean to be mean. Hide and seek champ. New Yorkers apparently are more worried about their personal safety than ever before. 61% are scared of being a victim of crime. Millions are buying guns, pepper sprays, or tasers for self-defense. Yeah, because they're terrified. They're absolutely terrified. I understand that. 8 New York cops surrounded. Maybe it's because everybody's doing this. 8 cops surrounded a guy who was smoking in a park. There's footage of a guy being arrested outside of a park. People, members of the public, were just shocked. And he apparently, he was asked why he was being arrested. He looks like a business dude. And they said he was violating a rule of Union Square Park. And apparently it was because he was, they said he was not in the, he was not in the park. He was like on the pavement outside the park and he was smoking. And you're not allowed to apparently smoke in the park. But if you look at the video, he was like in the, he wasn't in the park. He was on the sidewalk before the opening in the wall that leads to the park. And it took 8 people. I mean, maybe that's part of the problem in New York. Stick with us. We've got more in store.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
In North Carolina, we have been able to hold the culture wars at bay, but because they do have a one-seat supermajority in both chambers now, we've begun that process of getting into the culture wars. North Carolina will continue to have a fighter in me. You have a lot of businesses in North Carolina that are fighting this as well. You know, we're not here to fight Mickey Mouse. We're here to fight. We're here to fight for jobs in North Carolina.
Oh, for the love. I'm so tired of hearing that. We're not here to fat Mickey Mouse. If that's what you think that this is, then just don't talk about it. We have enough turds in the punch bowl of commentary here in this country. And we don't need, we do not need Governor Rory Cooper adding his turd in there, too. We don't need it. Welcome back to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash. I am dealing with an allergic reaction to my medication, and I'm going to have to probably go on steroids. I have to go to the doctor right after this. I'm fine. But I'm saying that I can say whatever I want, and you got to feel sorry for me because it's just, oh, you know what? It's because she's dealing with that. I just think that's a dumb, well, I'm so tired of people saying, oh, it's fighting Mickey. It's not fighting Mickey Mouse. I'm going to say this one more time for the drive-bys in the back. You had a corporation that for decades had received special anti-capitalist, anti-free market treatment that no one else received. The only thing comparable to that is like the Vatican being its own nation, city, state. And Disney was able to amass a lot of power because of that special treatment. And then it tried using that against parents because they were fighting them for control of what their children could be exposed to and when. Parents merely wanted to be able to influence the age appropriateness of materials that were introduced to their children in the classroom. They wanted to be aware of it and they wanted to have their consent sought. That's what the Parental Rights and Education Bill was all about. Disney decided to mischaracterize it purposefully and maliciously and fight parents for the sovereignty of their children. And so lawmakers, not just DeSantis, but Republican lawmakers across the state and a number of Democrats were infuriated, and it actually banded everyone together, and they decided that they were going to revoke the special anti-free market, anti-capitalist treatment, the anti-conservative and anti-Republican treatment that Disney had received for so long. And that was the result of it. Disney decided to leverage their special treatment and weaponize it, and then that was enough. So people who are sitting here saying that there should have been no action taken on Disney, I guess they're for against the free market and they're against capitalism, and they might as well stop calling themselves Republicans or conservatives, because giving that treatment to Disney is neither conservative nor is it Republican. Those aren't my rules. Those are just the facts. And if they want to diminish all of the culture war down to fighting Mickey Mouse, you're not fighting Mickey Mouse. You're talking about standing up for parents. And if Rory Cooper is that off base as to what parents are fighting for, then he's not in the fight, nor should he remark on it. Notice that the people who aren't in the battle are the ones who are just trying to say it's about Mickey Mouse. That's so unfortunate. Imagine being so far away from the pulse of America. Now, as it relates to some of this stuff with 2024, let's have a quick conversation about some of this stuff, because I saw this piece that came out from Rolling Stone today where they're trying to say, oh, Rupert Murdoch is so disappointed in DeSantis and he's worried that Democrats are going to prevail. First off, I don't think that this is a real piece, because you're talking about a publication that literally made up an entire story going after a fraternity over a false accusation of rape, and they really never apologized for it. And that's just one of the many BS stories that they've run over the years. I think that it's sensationalism. It's just a bunch of political smut. I don't think it has any bearing in reality, because I would imagine that Murdoch would have a better understanding of how politics and the political cycle works, more so than the person who bylined this piece at Rolling Stone. Like I said, they're in the press, and I think some in the right that are battling out for primary supremacy desperately want to make it. And I'm not saying this to stump for DeSantis. I'm saying this because there are choices that you have out there. And I don't want people to be shortchanged into believing that there is a false field at the behest of a false media narratives, if that makes sense to you. The press wants to select the nominee. Like I said, I think they want Trump as the nominee. I know they do, because Biden is only competitive, not inevitable, but competitive against Trump. And they got Newsom in the wings. And I really do think that a lot of people are very worried about DeSantis, because they saw this huge melding of minds in Florida. They saw Democrats voting in record pace for Republicans, for smaller government, for tax cuts, for basic things like, you know, parental sovereignty. They saw them voting for that, and that scares the hell out of them. Because if you take that and apply it nationally, they are going to take such a hit. They saw that Democrats, it may take a generation for Democrats in Florida to recover. You know, we talk about the blueprint that was done in Colorado. Two election cycles was all it took to undo 63 years of Democrat or Republican rule. What happened in Florida makes that look like child's play. And that has scared the hell out of Democrats, because up until now, no one has been able to best the blueprint. They have no idea what to do. So they need to, for the lack of a better way to say it, kill the campaign in the crib before it gets out. So they want to make it look like they're stalling, there's all this, but that's not what's reflected in fundraising. And that's where the true measure is this early. As I said before, the polling that's out, I have not seen a reliable poll yet. And I'm going to be very straight, no chaser about it. I've told you exactly who I like in the primary. I'm going to go with who wins the nomination in the general, but I told you who I like in the primary because I don't believe in blowing smoke up your backside like a lot of people on air who have their favorites, and they're not going to be honest with you about it because they don't respect you enough. You and I have been friends for a long time. But I am going to say this. I haven't seen a reliable poll that measures enthusiasm for any candidate yet. Even the one I like. Because all of the sample sizes are too damn small. Not a single one of them, not a single one of these sample sizes, and I talked about this yesterday, actually would even count to as a requirement to get someone on the debate stage. You have to have three. It has to have a minimum of 800 likely Republican voters, and the candidates have to pull 1% minimum. I don't see anybody that has 800 likely voters. I haven't seen likely Republican voters in larger press sizes than 500, and I have not seen an 800 sample size period yet. That's just the way things are. So that being said, let's look at what Rolling Stone is saying. First off, here's where Iowa comes in, because there's been some mistakes in Iowa. This is where I don't like when I see candidates mess up on my side, because I want us to have choices and I don't ever want us to look like we're making dumb choices. So I saw this tweet because Kim Reynolds is the Iowa governor, and Kim Reynolds won her state by what? 22 points, 22 points. And I think that was a state. What did Trump win that at? Like 6.8 or 8.6? I can't remember. Yeah. So she's super popular in Iowa. Republicans are very, very healthy in Iowa. She's a very popular governor. She's got a very popular Iowa faction. She's got grassroots that support her. I mean, you know, Republicans work for a long time to have that kind of base, to have that kind of support, right? But she puts in the work. She's very strong 2A. She's very limited government. And I saw this the other day. This was a piece that came out where she said that she's going to remain neutral in this primary. And it makes sense. Because Iowa is an early state. Why would you, and let me explain this from her perspective, regardless if you like the candidate I like or if you don't like the candidate I like, it makes sense for her to be neutral, and here's why. Iowa is an early state. You don't want to run people off from coming to Iowa because you almost handicap them in a way, politically speaking. You hurt them because you end up making it to where they're coming in with already a push against them. So I get it. It's a little, this is one of the reasons why McCarthy has declined to weigh in on all this stuff. I mean, it makes sense. She's thinking of her voters, and that's her job. So that said, I saw this piece. I think this was what? Was this The Hill? May have been The Hill. I want to make sure I have this correct. There was a piece that came out. It said she wanted to remain neutral. It was also New York Times. So Trump came out and he said, quote, "I love Iowa, protected and expanded ethanol, got $28 billion from China, our great farmers." He went on, talked about trade. And he says, "I opened up the governor position for Kim Reynolds. And when she fell behind, I endorsed her, did big rallies, and she won. Now she wants to remain neutral. I don't invite her to defense. DeSanct us down 45 points. Well, that's the point. The poll that he's citing, by the way, is the one that has a 248-person sample size. I just want to point that out. First off, this was the wrong take for him to have. It was just a bad take. She's super popular, and she's done a lot of really good things there. I also think that if Trump is going to take credit for people like Kim Reynolds, then he's got to take credit for people like Oz and like and a bunch of these other races where people weren't successful. You can't have it both ways. That's number one. Number two, DeSantis followed up, and he had credited her with being a strong governor. He said that she was a strong governor, and that he basically complimented her. It was a really, really different way. There was a real big difference in how they responded. I was looking up his exact tweet. It was a really big difference in how he responded. This is what he said. He goes, "Kim Reynolds is a strong leader who knows how to ignore the chirping and get it done. She earned a landslide re-election because she delivered big results, and she's poised to deliver even more for Iowans in this special session." And that's true. Very different take there. Now, then there was this situation with family leader Bob Vanderplatz yesterday. They're having a leadership summit in Iowa this week, and he announced that Trump was not going to go to it. And so that's caused a lot of consternation. There was also Senator Joni Ernst's Roast and Ride event. He did not go. Trump did not go to that event. Now, he also criticized the heartbeat bill. He said that the bill that Iowa passed was too harsh. Oh, boy. So this is the problem. I'm getting a little nervous, and here's why. New York Times, NBC, The Messenger, they say, Politico, here are the headlines that are being developed now. Trump picking fights in Iowa, no matter the consequences. Trump's attack on Iowa's popular governor hints at vulnerability in the state. Iowa snubs, ruffle feathers. I say this because I like to have healthy competitors, because you never know what's going to happen. We are so far out from the first votes being cast in the earlier primaries and caucuses. I don't want to see him pull a Hillary Clinton in Iowa like she did with Wisconsin. Going there once and going to a Dairy Queen and spending, you know, a couple of days there is one thing. You cannot be doing this, though. This is not how you campaign. And I feel like he's phoning it in. And he needs to not do that. If he wants to be competitive, he needs to not do that. Nothing is ever certain. I've told people before, I don't believe in the concept of loyalty to a politician. We literally just, a week ago, celebrated the rejection of loyalty to monarchs and self-appointed leaders. Why in the world would we suddenly adopt that mentality and apply it to 2023? Leaders, politicians are to demonstrate loyalty to the voter. That's how this works. And it's always in politics, it's what have you done for me lately? That is the mantra. That is going to come and hurt him. He has got to be careful here. This is a lack of discipline in messaging. And this is why you need good people around you to rein you in and tell you no sometimes. Now, I'm saying this strictly clinically. It's not good to do this. And the other thing, too, that I worry about is that people are spending so much time on the back and forth already for the presidential primary. You cannot forget the Senate. Now, I told you about the stuff with the NDAA, right? And the fight with the military wokery and all of this other stuff. I mean, they're already amassing and signaling who they think could be weak and who Democrats are going to go after. We got to pick up 3 seats in order to get control of the Senate. So you have to think about all of this stuff. These are unenforced errors that should not be made by any kind of presidential campaign. Now, it's one thing to make mistakes. It's one thing I was telling you about fundraising and all of this other stuff. That Rolling Stone piece, I think, is just dumb. When you look at the fundraising numbers, the New York Times had another piece on fundraising. Don't be caught up into the narrative, the media narratives of this. And I hope that the candidates aren't either. Because like I said, I have my preference, but at the same time, we are not so secure electorally that we can afford to have any candidate run a sloppy campaign. You have to have a backup plan. I always think of backup plans. And then I like to have backup plans for my backup plans. Yep. So I don't want anyone to make dumb mistakes. And I think he just needs to get a little bit more discipline. It's politics. It's not personal. That's how you got to look at this. There are so many people in politics that I will sometimes criticize very, very lightheartedly. I never attack people that are allies publicly. I'll say something privately first. And then if that doesn't work, then it goes public. But, you know, it's not personal. It's politics. There are people that I have opposed. They supported one candidate. I supported another in like a Senate primary or something else. And we are still friends. Like in Missouri, my home state of Missouri, I liked Schmidt. Some people liked another candidate. Schmidt ended up winning. The people who had liked the other candidate in the primary, we're all still friends. It's politics. It's not personal. And the Trump campaign needs to keep that in mind because this Iowa stuff does not help.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Vladimir and I, shouldn't be so familiar. Mr. Zelensky and I talked about
Vladimir.
Guarantees we could make in the meantime. When I was in Ukraine and when we met...
Save us. Good heavens. You know, that's why aliens don't visit. They're like, no, this is hysterical. Just watch. That was the president. He met with Zelensky. I was looking at his schedule, his agenda for the day. Good grief. All right, I'm running out of time for Kane. Today in stupidity.
All right, we'll play a little bit of this. It's Kamala Harris.
It's so good.
And I think the first part of this issue that should be articulated is AI is kind of a fancy thing. It's two fancy letters. It means artificial intelligence.
Oh, my gosh. Thank
it's,
you.
What?
Thank you.
For the love, guys! I can't with this woman.
I thought it was automatic intelligence.
It's a fancy term, you know. That does it for us today. Sign up for Chapter and Verse, the newsletter over at Substack. Have a great night. I will be back with you tomorrow.